He awoke for the third consecutive occasion and woke, sweating and terrified, with the details of the dream vivid in his mind. His hands were clutching the simple iron frame of the bedstead above his head, and the dews of his night terror had soaked the linen of the bedding. His name was Farlow. He was a genius in his line, that of higher physics. He was also a friend and acquaintance of mine. And I believe it my duty to tell his story. Not that I know what it all means, but I do know that Farlow was not mad. And yet, why should a celebrated scientist be admitted at his own request as a private patient to Green Mansion for rest and observation? Green Mansion is, not to put too fine a point on it, a luxuriously appointed mental home. You see, my friend Farlow experienced a brand of mental torture that is perhaps greater than anything ever recorded, more terrible than anything dreamed up by the horror writers of the last two centuries. He traveled further than any other into the regions that lie beyond midnight.
Biotex, the new soap and pre-wash powder, presents Beyond Midnight by Michael McKay.
Recently, I received a letter from Mrs. Myra Strawn. It was quite a lengthy letter and emphasized many of the points we've been making over the past month about Biotex. She said that when the product first came on the market, she and her daughters were a bit skeptical, but nevertheless decided to give it a go. And indeed, she is now most enthusiastic and a great supporter. She recommends it to neighbors and friends. Another letter from Mrs. J. Lake of Fruitflame Mine Springs said that she wished to congratulate the makers of Biotex and went on to say that she had two children, 6 and 7 years of age, and that her spin dryer was not able to cope with the stubborn stains of their prey curves. Well, nowadays, she soaks with Biotex overnight in cold water and finds her washing much whiter, and colored clothes are brighter and stain-free.
Farlow was an old friend of mine, and I have pieced the story together as it was told me over a longish space of time, both from his own lips and from those of the superintendent, Dr. Sundquist, a psychiatrist of great sympathy and brilliance. It was a month or more after the onset of the dream that Farlow had written to tell me that he would appreciate a visit.
I didn't contact you before, Basil, because, well, you knew, of course, that I'd come into this place.
I knew, yes, the news is abroad, but only in the hands of trustworthy people, so you know.
No, I don't worry. I don't for one moment worry about... Basil, I want to tell you a story.
A story?
Yes. A story with as yet no end. You must forgive me in the telling of it if my thoughts aren't clear, if I ramble.
Yes, of course. I mean, what...
I've been having dreams. At least, I like to call them dreams.
Dreams?
Yes. I say dreams. They are all bits of one, the same dream. Let me try to begin at the beginning. This dream world is a place of terror and fear for me. I've tried to find the place. I've studied maps and atlases of the whole world, but I haven't found...
Well, but surely if it's a dream place...
No, wait. You'll see. Early one morning, about 1 o'clock, a month or so ago, perhaps it was 2 months, I don't know, this morning, I came home very tired. I think perhaps I've been overdoing things in the laboratory. Of course, I worked too hard. What physicist doesn't? I was hungry anyway. I had rather a heavy meal. Nearly a pint of black coffee. Quite. And, of course, I didn't sleep. Not until nearly 3 o'clock. And I dreamed. But the thing is, although I knew I was within a dream, I also knew I was awake. In this dream, I was cold. And I was in water. Shallow water. I knew that I was in deadly danger of my life. Or at least I had been. My mouth was soaked with moisture and salt. And then I felt sand between my toes, which were bare. I opened my eyes, and I found myself
in the shallows of the wildest, bleakest shore I had ever seen. I was exhausted, and I started to drag myself up onto a long beach of sloping white sand. It was dawn. When I awoke, it was just 3:10. I know that the last time I'd looked at the clock before sleeping, if you can call it that, the time was only 3:02. And yet I know I had been away for hours.
Yes, but you know, you must do it. A second or two in a dream must be, I mean, can be straight.
To eternity, yes, I know, but I'm afraid it's not as easy as that. You see, I felt very frightened. And I switched on the light out of bed. And between my toes, there was sand. And my pajamas were soaked with cold, salt water. You can imagine how terrified I was. The situation is bizarre, unbelievable. And yet, it is perfectly true. I'm not mad.
Frightening, I agree. On the strength of a dream, why, I mean...
Not a dream, Basil, but many dreams. And in all of them, I am in the same place, upon that same shore, and I am progressing. Each time I dream a little longer, see more things. A week passed before I dreamed again, and then just as before, I found myself first in the water and then on the beach. I was coughing. I felt almost drowned. The vision went on even longer. The shore was wild and beautiful, and I knew to be somewhere in the east. It was not the east as known today, but at a time of great antiquity. It was misty, and the sun came up through the mist. Somehow it seemed a younger sun we know today. And then I awoke, came back, if you like, through the veil.
And this time, were you...
I was wet with seawater, yes. My third dream began with me already lying on the beach. I'd somehow recovered from being in the sea. The sun was well up. I felt as if I'd been lying on the beach for at least 3 hours. In the fourth dream, the sun was higher still in the sky. It is like a cinema film projected over and over again. A little more of the
action revealed
each time.
I see.
I'm afraid, Basil. To be supposing my sanity to be in question.
I have every belief in your sanity. Of that, I assure you. I may continue to visit you?
I'm counting on it. I need you.
No other knows of the dreams?
Dr. Sonquist.
His reaction?
He's puzzled, of course. But very sympathetic.
I'll come again in 3 days.
Please do.
Of course, I was fully aware of my friend's fears. Not only did he feel his sanity to be suspect, if, in fact, he was journeying in or on some other plane, would he, during one of the dreams, fail to get back? Would he be lost in this 20th century world? I offered to stay with him in his room and watch. I was sure that Sonquist would agree to this, but Farley would not agree. He said this might prevent him from returning. I think if any other man in the world had told me the story, I would be skeptical. Perhaps even disbelieving. But from begin to end, the frightening and bizarre climax, I believed him. I found him on my next visit considerably agitated.
The sequence is advancing faster now. But the terrifying thing is, when I awoke or became conscious in the dream, I was hardly more than that. I was a long way up the beach. But this isn't all. When I awoke here, in my room, my pajamas had gone. I was dressed differently, in some sort of open-neck blouse thing, if linen. And my lower half was covered in a pair of baggy pantaloons. What's happening to me, Basil? And are there two me's existing on different planes, or what? I fear I am traveling in these dreams towards some kind of fate, and I shall be able to do nothing to prevent it. When it happens, what will he find here in the bed, in this world, on my return?
I was prevented from seeing Farlow for almost 3 weeks. I had to leave the country on business. I cut short my trip there and hurried back because I, too, had a dream. Nothing terrifying, just a common and garden nightmare in which my friend Farlow was in dire straits. I went immediately to Green Mansion. Sam Quist assured me that all was apparently well with the physicist, at least on the surface. And indeed, I found him quite calm and rational.
From the night before, Lassie, I had a dream for 2 nights. The last time was Friday. Basil, a week or so ago, Sunquist asked me if I thought it would be possible to bring something back from the dream world of the shore.
Sunquist asked you that?
You're surprised. Sunquist is taking this seriously.
And so am I assure you. Physicists of your reputation and standing do not tell fairy tales. Go on, the doctor said...
The dreams have been averaging 3 a week, never more. Each time, each one's progressive. There's bright sun now in the dreams, and the waves are quite calm. And in the distance, I'm able to see the spires of some city.
But you said you tried to bring something back. Well, were you successful?
Have you a cigarette?
Of course, yeah. From a drawer, he took out something wrapped in white cloth. He brought it across to me and put it down on the table in front of me.
And look at this. It's all right. Don't be alarmed. It's nothing unpleasant.
I must confess my hand was a little unsteady as I unwrapped the cloth. What I had before me was a piece of reddish-colored rock, about 6 inches long and 3 wide, weighing perhaps a couple of pounds.
You don't mean to say you actually brought this back from...
Yes, that's exactly what I do.
Have you had anyone look at this thing?
It was one of the best geologists we've got. He was quite excited. He was puzzled, too. He places it at the time of Christ. He says it comes from a world of approximately 1,960 years ago. What upset him, though, was the fact that there's been no weathering since. That piece of rock is as it was. Then. I have some whiskey here. Would you care for a...
Now, an effective spray-on furniture polish that gives a wax shine instantly. Johnson's Pledge. Just spray on, and your duster becomes a magnet. Picks up every speck of dust in seconds. Pledge dusts, cleans, deep waxes quickly, easily. And new, deeper wax formula Pledge will protect your furniture longer. Buy Johnson's Pledge aerosol today.
Soak, soak. That's all you have to do. Soak, soak. Just for an hour or two, you buy.
Amazing new Biotechs act with a biological action to soak out the stubbornest stains and loosen dust. New Biotechs is great for all textiles and synthetics, whites and colors. It contains no bleach. Get amazing new Biotechs today and let soaking do the washing.
Again claimed me for several weeks soon after Farlow's incredible revelation. We kept in touch by letter, and I learned that there had been considerable progression in the dreams. He was dreaming them now 5 or 6 times a week. When I saw him again, his face was gaunt, his eyes bright and unnatural.
In this other place, I'd forgotten all about my ordeal in the sea. I could see spires and turrets of the city quite clearly now. And strange as it may seem, I'm still in the dream quite light-hearted. It's as if I should be there. As if I'm there for a purpose. I know the name of the city. Emilion. Oh, I know its name. I can't imagine. It's not in any modern atlas. I've searched and searched. Heaven knows. It's a beautiful city. Each time these dreams come, I feel stronger and stronger. I've taken to running along the beach, splashing in and out of the water. I gaze at this distant city, which progressively draws nearer. It's a joyous city, shrouded in a rosy mist. It's like Mont Saint-Michel on a bright spring morning.
Multiply mortally, shell 100 gold, and there you have 1,000,000.
Next in my dreams, the banner. And more and more turrets of 1,000,000 were seen. Across a vast stretch of foaming strand, more than 1 mile wide, which was stained all pink and gold with the light of the rising sun. And I knew that there was a woman in 1,000,000 who was waiting for me. A woman who is waiting for me. And I know, too, that I love her. I was walking towards the city, and suddenly I became aware of something, a faint white shape, hazy, like something seen through gauze, away near the city wall. I'm only half a mile away now. I can see this moving shape, or collection of shapes. It seems to be stationary, and at the same time, it also appears to be moving at an incredible speed. Suddenly I feel afraid. Cold air seems to disperse the last of the mist. And suddenly I feel terribly afraid. I'm still walking. Walking toward 1,000,000. And then I wake up. Or I should say I woke up. For that was my last dream. And I experienced it only last night. I was sweating and icy cold and terribly afraid. And I'm afraid to sleep tonight. I've asked Dr. Sundquist to stay not far from me tonight. Shall we have a whiskey, Basil? Each time I drink with you, I feel it may be for the last time.
I was visiting Farlow every day now. In the mornings. My business was forgotten. I made what arrangements I could so that my living should not altogether go to rack and ruin, but I have to confess that for the greater part of the daylight hours, and sometimes in the dead of night, too, my thoughts were constantly with the tortured man who was one of my greatest friends. One thing still puzzled me above all else.
Of course you realize, like you and like the splendid Dr. Stonquist, the whole business completely confuses me. But another thing. Listen, you have been at Green Mansion for a long time now. Quite early. Soon after the onset of those dreams. You volunteered to come here. Now, why? Why so soon, I mean? Surely you were not so very strange, so very frightening to begin with, but before waking up and finding sand on your feet and the seawater in your clothes. Is there something you haven't told me?
Yes.
What is it?
The voices.
Voices?
The janissaries of 1,000,000.
What?
I've never told you before. From perhaps the second dream onwards, I've heard that phrase. In the wind, it seemed. Called from somewhere. The janissaries of 1,000,000. Voices I've heard clamoring. The janissaries. What do you make of it?
Janissaries were a sort of guard, weren't they?
Yes. I thought it was to bring me the book. The janissaries were a body of Turkish infantry in olden times. The personal bodyguard of the Sultan of Turkey. They were abolished in 1826. The reference book also gives them as personal instruments of tyranny, Turkish soldier.
But how does this tie in with the period being 2,000 years ago? Or East?
The janissaries were a terribly ancient force which existed under many names. They also operated outside Turkey in the East. In my dream, they are coming, this white ship. It's a body of horsemen. The janissaries of 1,000,000. In my last dream, Basil, I distinguished the very robes they wear. I could almost see their faces.
Oh, very well. You surely can't take this seriously. I mean, this late...
You haven't heard me out. I now know the nature of the threat.
Threat?
I am trying to reach the city. I know I shall never reach the city. Crossing the water to reach me are a body of horsemen clad in white robes.
Can a dream do to harm you?
They will kill me! When they reach me, I'll die!
In my opinion, you need perhaps more skilled medical advice than Sundquist can give you, my friend. If I might suggest...
Good morning, Mr. Basil Copper.
doubted Farlow's sanity. I didn't go to see him for 3 days. When next I did go, he seemed to have forgotten our disagreement. I was shocked by the sight of him. He was even more fine, drawn, and gaunt than ever. The dream had progressed. He was able, he said, to see the cruel oriental faces of the horsemen now. They carried short, heavy-bladed swords. They wore turbans. They looked so rapacious and sadistic that his dream self was near to fainting with fear. He believed the end was very near now.
Half the man he was. He lies all day upon his bed, listening to the birds, smoking, dreading the night. He says no man can help him.
Can anyone help him, Dr. Stonquist? Can you help him?
I don't know. For the first time in my career, I'm completely and utterly baffled. One thing I do know, though, there is no physical danger. If we are unable to help him, then he may lose his mind for good. But that a dream can harm him other than mentally, no.
I only saw Farlow once more. I remember the occasion very well. It was a Thursday evening, late spring. I was feeling helpless and more gloomy than ever I can remember.
Many things begin to unkind, my research, my work. A sense of doom fills my horizon. Those faces. Those ghastly faces. The cruel eyes. If Sunquist is not successful, it will reach me and it will be the end. The Janissaries of a million. The Janissaries of a million.
Come in, please, Mr. Copper.
The matron didn't want me to see you, Doctor. She tried to put me off with the superintendent. The place...
Please close the door.
Well, the place is crawling with policemen. Now, I've come to see Farlow.
I have bad news for you. I'm afraid Farlow died in the night.
What happened?
He had a heart attack. There was nothing we could do.
Why are the police here, then?
That is about another matter. Now, if...
I'm sorry, Doctor. I insist. He was my dear friend.
Do you
believe that he was mad?
I sometimes believe that I may be.
Now, what does that mean? Doctor, I want to know. Why the police?
What? Sir, I can rely on your complete discretion.
Absolutely.
You are completely aware of all the progressive stages of Farlow's dreams or visions?
He gave me his confidence.
He was very quiet during the last day or two of his treatment. He became very agitated on the last afternoon, though. He told me that these Janissaries of a million were so close that he could almost touch them. He said if he slept that night, he knew he would die. I told him that the night would prove him wrong. I said it was the last crisis. He would come through it and lead a normal life again. He was put under sedatives that night. At 4 in the morning, the whole sanatorium was aroused by the most appalling screams. Photographs have been taken. Investigations are being held at county level. Photographs are on that disc of theirs.
Here we go. When I had taken my leave of Dr. Sonquist, I drove back to my house. I wrapped the piece of rock Farlow had given to me in a piece of sacking and weighted it with stones secured by wire. And I drove out to the point and hurled it into the deepest part of the sea. But the thing haunts my brain, and mentally, my sleep too has become more and more broken. I pray earnestly that I never dream the same dream as Farlow. For you see, Humphrey showed me the photographs. But I think they would have been better destroyed.
Farlow's room, which was padded, contained no sharp edges or weapons of any kind, and yet, make no mistake about it, though the thing is scientifically impossible, Farlow had been hacked to pieces as surely as if a dozen men had attacked him with sharpened swords or knives.